Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be back. Today, we're going to talk about something that's actually important for all of us, but maybe not very common knowledge. And the word is common. We want to talk about this thing called common good. You know, we live in society and we are probably very familiar with the fact that we share things in like public utilities and infrastructure. Those are called public goods or common goods. But there's another concept called the common good. And it actually should matter a lot to us as Christians. And here to talk to me about what this is, why it's important, a little bit about the history and how we are headed looking to the future is Nathaniel Goh. Hi, Nat.
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you back with us. We remember you were here to talk to us about the foundation of Christian ethics, and there's so much more about that we need to hear. But today, we want to talk about common good, and we are so appreciative of your presence. Nat, of course, is youth pastor at Sengkang Methodist Church and also teaches Christian ethics at the Trinity Theological College. Nat is married to Charmaine. They have a 7-year-old son who's really cute. I just met over Zoom. And another one on the way. So thanks for taking out time to speak with us, Nat.
My pleasure.
Okay, so let's get started then. What is this whole concept called the common good? Why should it matter to Christians?
Well, the common good should matter to Christians because in the Christian tradition of thinking about the common good is actually the summit or the highest of earthly moral acts. The common good is the pinnacle almost of all penultimate things. So that is, I can think this is probably the most important reason why the common good should matter to us as Christians.
So it sounds like it's actually a vision of life as good as it can get on earth, because you use the word penultimate.
Yes, that's
so
right. Yeah,
ultimate vision of life is in heaven with God. But that's another subject for another time. But we're talking about actually Christians, we have a vision for life on earth, which is more than what we are seeing right now or experiencing. Tell us a little bit more about what this common good looks like or feels like.
So the idea behind the common good is this question: what is a good life? That's where Aristotle began. And his answer was a good life lies in pursuing the common good, not just your own individual good. So the example given like that we can think of today would be an ice cream is not a common good. Although we may feel like when the government stopped dessert shops from doing the circuit breaker, we felt like, oh, we lost a common good. Right? The ice cream is a sensible good, and if I share my ice cream with you, I don't get to enjoy that part of that ice cream anymore. Right? Mm-hmm. But common goods are different. The common good is something that all our personal individual good is encapsulated in it. Right? And the common good is something that we share together in that way. My personal good is wrapped up completely with the common good. And the common good feeds my personal good. So that's that relationship between the two. And that's really where the Christian tradition begins to think about something like the common good.
And that's a very interesting thing, because we live mainly, you know, where we think about, okay, how can I lead a meaningful life? How can I live life as best? We think from an individual perspective. So this common thing starts from a very different point. And it's even saying that what is good for me can be good for you. And if it's something, it's the point is it's common. It's a common goodness that we share. But how does it actually work?
Right. So in Christian theology, the common good, the most common good of all, the highest common good, is actually God in himself. Because God is the source, the fountain of all goodness. Everything that we call good comes from God, or God is the measure of the good. And God shares this goodness with all of the universe. And so when they are thinking about the common good, really theologians point towards God as the highest common good. and therefore the pursuit of the common good for them carries out the Bible's double commandment to love God with your heart, mind, and soul, as well as to love your neighbor as yourself. Pursuing the common good for them was a way of morally fulfilling this double command. So that's where the Christian tradition really goes with the idea of the common good. The idea, for example, in Ignatius of Loyola, when he's setting up the Jesuit order, they had this line that said, the formula of the Institute of the Jesuit order has this line that says, according to what will seem expedient to the glory of God and the common good. So it's in the Christian tradition, very early on, people realized that our service to God also carries that kind of horizontal dimension towards our fellow men in society, because we can't live alone. I know that, I mean, this is a hot topic happening now in the US with the riots and the protests that are happening. And I think what we are seeing there is the effects of the loss of common good thinking today. Which is why common good thinking is so important. Decades of evacuating religion from public life or eliminating and privatizing substantive common beliefs and goals and moral traditions, tearing down institutions, focusing on individual liberty, things like that. I mean, and placing the self, individualism, self-identity as the highest good, all these accumulated for many decades, it's a wonder that things have not combusted earlier. But what we're seeing now, partially, of course, racial justice, all this is very important, and it's a topic that you can dedicate an entire podcast to, probably. But all of what I've just described, that underlying fundamental beliefs and thick accounts of social life together are important, and as we've whittled them down, what we're seeing is the inevitable effects of that over many decades. So I think that's why we need to really urgently recover a common good thinking globally, but also in Singapore, we need to ensure that, yeah, the common good remains part of our moral vocabulary and our moral grammar.
That's a very good point. You're right. So for us as Christians, the common good begins with the fact that the one thing we can all share, and if I have more of God, you won't have less of God, is of course God himself. But when we want to have a conversation, let's say, with the rest of society that does not have the Christian vision of life, where God is at the center and he is the highest good that we want or can experience in our life, then how can we negotiate or communicate this notion of the common good?
I think I can help to answer that by just contrasting the common good with some other terms that are normally used. One notion is the notion of general welfare, for example. So one way in which we have commonly in the past measured general welfare is, say, GNP, Gross National Product. But scholars and people on the ground have pointed us to the fact that the GNP doesn't really tell us what the distribution of wealth is like in a society. So even though the GNP, the gross national product, can be high, there are still huge inequalities between members of society together. And so this general welfare may not be common to members of society at all. So this is one example in which thinking about the common good, within the Christian tradition, there's this thing called the preferential option for the poor. So we are actually going and looking at the disenfranchised, the marginalized, the poor, those who are left out of this conversation when we talk about, you know, good in a country or good in a nation or a society. And we're saying, no, hey, things are not good for them. And the common good says, if things are not good for them, then things are not good for all. Right. So I think that's one way in which we can distinguish or think or begin to have conversations with people in a pluralistic society who may not share our faith or our vision of the good. And I think I think they can agree on things like that we want to try and eliminate poverty, for example. We want to bridge the gap between members of society with each other. So I think those are the ground that we can find a common moral standing with.
That's a very good point. And I think actually when, let's say, somebody like Aristotle started thinking about this, his society was not hunky-dory. There was also a lot of injustice, oppression, there's a lot of mess. I mean, family units were very ill-defined. I mean, they had their own definitions. Was just, and I think there was a hunger in Aristotle to say, even like, to have this longing, right? And I think that's what the Bible describes as eternity being placed in the hearts of men. We have a longing that our life has meaning. We have a longing that together we can be better in some ways. And we have a longing that things cannot be so broken. And maybe that's where our common vocabulary can be. And that's a very good thing that you pointed out. Just the fact that we share a common humanity as the starting point. That you're human, I'm human, we have certain inalienable rights to safety, you know, and just basic stuff so that we can live with dignity. And I think as Christians, we believe that very much because we believe we're made in the image of God and that every life is sacred and has worth. So that actually really allows us to maybe even lead the way in some of these conversations. Yeah. And yes, have you seen this happen in the church, in the history of the church?
In the history of the church, pursuing the common good?
Yeah, and Christians leading the way.
Yes, I mentioned the Jesuits just now, for example. The first Jesuits, the pursuit of their vision of service to the common good included obviously religious ministries such as defending and propagating the Christian faith, preaching, sacraments. But it also included tasks that appeared more secular, such as the education of youth and the illiterate, reconciling the estranged, compassionate assistance to those in prisons and in hospitals. One of the key tenets of the common good is really setting up institutions. And I don't just mean organizations or buildings. I mean really institutions such as marriage, supporting marriage, supporting the family, for example, schools, hospitals, care for the homeless. I mentioned the preferential option for the poor, helping in the rule of law. For example, in medieval times, the canon law system really becomes part of our common law tradition as well. So everywhere you look, and it's well articulated in this book called Dominion by Tom Holland. Everywhere you look in the Western tradition, you can see kind of the fingerprints of the Christian thinking for the common good. One other good example is in the way selflessness, humility now is seen as a virtue, right? In the past, this would have been unheard of. What mattered was power and fame and, you know, courage. How in the world did we come to expect of our political leaders servitude, humility, right? This is well documented in Tom Holland's book in the sense that he really traces this to part of Christians serving the common good, you know, and that's how this virtue became part of the Western tradition, broadly speaking. So I think these are some examples. In the UK, for example, the ceasing of trading on Sunday was seen as a religious thing for the Church of England. But in reality, it really taught society that consumption is not everything, or that work is not your work is not the bottom line, and there's something equally important or more important than just selling and buying. And so that Sunday Sabbath kind of idea became ingrained in society, and it really promoted that kind of familial ties, communal ties happening on a day set aside for that. So that's one way in which you see the church has helped to promote common goods and the common good in society, I think.
That's very interesting, because that leads me to think about how so, you know, sometimes as Christians, we have to think a bit clearly, and maybe we feel a little bit uncomfortable thinking that when we put our values out there, we are sort of imposing, and especially in this postmodern milieu that we live in, sometimes it gets a bit threatening to feel like we're imposing. But if we step back and really dig deeper and think about it from, say, this perspective of common good, and if the value that we're trying to uphold actually will be good for everybody, and it's open to dialogue, of course, open to discussion, debate, and then it proves its mettle that, yeah, this is a good, you know, and then it becomes something institutionalized, as you say, not necessarily as an organization, but it becomes a value that people can ascribe to. People can, that's really worth pursuing. And that's the institutionalization of values in that sense. And that's what transforms societies. Yeah. And your earlier example where you refer to the US and how the very key and crucial elements of common good were eroded over time, really led to how the society is now so polarized, things are so polemical, and there is just a lot of potential for violence to erupt. Because when there's no common good, there is also no security. I think psychosocially, there is that dimension too, that we are sharing space, but I don't feel safe in that space because I don't know what's our agreement about the space. You know, we don't agree on what this space is for, what can be done here, what can't be done here. And I think a society at that point will suffer from a lot of fractures and surface a lot of instability. So you're right, then common good is very important for us. Help us distinguish between common good from, say, social justice or human rights. Earlier you mentioned welfare, but how about social justice and human rights? What's the difference?
Well, I want to point out that in the kind of theological, philosophical approach in the common good, something that really helps to us is to think about the common good. It's quite radical. Nowadays, we hear people talk about the common good as though it's the aggregative interests of every individual. Like you combine your good, my good together, then we have the common good. Well, actually, Aquinas and the Christian thinking about the common good says we can share in this common good only, or we can have our personal good only because we all share in a common good. They flip that on its head. They say that because all self-interest, all human goods, all created goods are, to use that big word again, penultimate, they are not God, right? So even the good of the globe, the good of the universe, the good of Singapore, from our standpoint as Christians, is still, even if it's very high on our priority, is still second, always subordinate to God. And so because God is the highest common good and we all can participate in God, the highest good, therefore, that assures that human dignity, as you mentioned just now, is protected, because no human can ever be forced to call the good of someone else my highest good, right? Our highest good is God. So that means even for me, I can never say, Jenny, the good of Singapore is greater than your good, right? Because it is the highest good that you must pursue. It's not. The highest good that you must pursue is always God. So within the Christian tradition, this limits all earthly pursuits in that sense. And it makes it... It frees us. It frees us to pursue solidarity and help each other, because we realize that no one can force us to make that thing our highest good. Only God can be our highest good. I know
that's actually very. It sounds foreign to us, but if we pause and we think about it, it's true. I mean, God says to seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and to love Him, like you said, that was the great commandments, to love Him. And as Christians, I think we really let that settle into our souls. God is our sufficiency. God is our beatific vision. It's our end, also our destination. So when things are in their proper place, then we can subordinate the lesser good to the greatest good. I hear you say that, I feel there are also several implications coming out of that. One, of course, is that there's enough of God to go around, so we can shed the scarcity mindset.
Definitely. And
each one of us, therefore, our potential, our possibility is only matched by our willingness and our hunger for God. Okay, so that's the first implication that comes to my mind. So I see you say that. The second one is that also tells us that if we measure and help each other in the church to desire God and, you know, grow in our relationship with God, then that becomes like the priority thing to look at. And perhaps that also helps to foster some degree of contentment in our life, because common good is not everybody having the same income. It's not communism, right? And I think the Bible is quite clear that some will be rich and some will be poor. We will have very different circumstances. And at the end of the day, the Bible also says that our circumstances are temporal. What really lasts and what really counts is our eternal standing with God and our eternal relationship, the state and the quality of that relationship. And that nobody is disqualified, nobody is marginalized as long as they want it. So I feel contentment is therefore the second implication that comes out of that. And a lot of things grow out of a soil of contentment. Can you think of other implications? I'm trying to think right now on my feet as I hear you say this. Just in terms of not seeing this common good as one more agenda that we must, but actually as a way of seeing life and a way of living life that really helps everyone flourish, not the least each one of us personally, because ultimately it's about God. Yeah.
I think all that you've raised is excellent. I mean, these are ways in which common good thinking can really saturate our moral acts, the things that we pursue. I think coming to your question about how do we distinguish, the common good with, say, social justice and so on. One aspect of the common good that I find really interesting is that there is more to a good nation or more to a good world or a good family or a good friendship than just sharing in external goods, right? Let's say we share in a public park and things like that. These are all common goods, but there is more to it. The relationships of concern or affection among siblings and friends go deeper than just sharing external goods. In essence, there's a question about why should we be together at all? And the common good really is a good answer for that, or the common good is a good way to enter more deeply into this mystery, to think about it. Why should we have shared bonds of affection at all? Well, why can't we just share peace and order and justice? Why can't we have that instead of thinking about the common good? But the common good really reminds us about our solidarity as human beings, a common humanity, which you mentioned, which we share. Things like that are part of that tradition of thinking about the common good. So it's not simply thinking about circumstances like the rule of law or justice, although these are all part of the common good, right? Not just these situations and institutions, but also just the very fundamental question of why should we be a society at all? What is the good of us being together at all? And I think that's what the common good really, really helps us to sharpen our thinking in that direction.
So how is it then to keep asking for more distinctions? How does that then contrast with, say, the social compact that we also regularly talk about? Is there a dimension in common good that is beyond transactional and which makes it therefore very vital to human life?
Yes. So commonly, when we talk about the common good, what most people or even what politicians sometimes refer to is the greater good. You know, you do this, stay at home for the greater good. And the idea of the greater good is, in my opinion, kind of inferior to the idea of the common good. Because the greater good is something that is that the following Jeremy Bentham, you know, the greatest good for the greatest number of people, which means there will always be someone left out in this equation. As long as we can hit. The other concept of public interest is that public institutions and policies are ways of securing individual rights. And so that way of thinking makes the public interest a disaggregative concept. It breaks down the good of that we share together into, okay, this, Jenny, this is how this good is good for you and your family, and that's it. You know, this is the way you should think about it. It is transactional in that sense. It breaks down everything that happens in our society as, how does this benefit me? You know, how does this help my self-interest? And so I think that's one way in which we need to kind of better enter into common good thinking to distinguish the way we talk about public policy, the way we talk about what pursuits we want. Even this idea, I mean, in Singapore, a very live idea of, oh, please don't build a foreign workers dormitory in my backyard, right? Not in my neighborhood. Yeah, this idea that, yes, this is a common good. It is good. Most people agree it is good that people are housed humanely with good living conditions, you know, and it will benefit us all, but just not, please don't do it here, you know, do it somewhere else. So that's where I think where we push too hard on this idea of how does the common good benefit me personally? How does it benefit me individually? Then we run into this kind of thinking where, there's a calculus, you know, we were trying to see which one will help me more and which one will help others more. If we think about things like a beautiful sunset or a clean environment, that can help us turn our minds away from the purely economic transactional model that we are used to. The value of a sunset or a clean environment is not diminished because you enjoy it, right? Rather, you know, in fact, sometimes we find the more people enjoying it, the better it is. And so, it helps to think of examples like these, where the enjoyment of this good by some people does not mean that it cannot be enjoyed by others. And I think, particularly in Singapore, we really need to recover some of this emphasis in the good. I think the Speaker of the House, Mr. Tan Chuan Jin, recently did a kind of a dialogue session, I think just over the weekend, the past weekend. And he said, yeah, you know, this is something that he hopes Singaporeans will recover. The kind of personal responsibility for everyone's good, in that sense, you know. And I think that is something really critical, yeah, for this common good thinking to flourish, is the idea that there are some goods that really require us working together in order for us to accomplish them, or in order for us to have them. And it cannot simply just be about working for your self-interest. Yeah. For example, the good of peace cannot be accomplished by yourself. It requires policemen, the rule of law, soldiers, youth, in young men in Singapore willing to take out 2 years of their lives to dedicate to this, right? All of this coming together, and it helps us to enjoy some form of peace in this life. So it's not transactional in the sense of, yeah, how can I personally, because you can't personally guarantee peace for Singapore on your own. But us working together in this way, we can, that's how we do it. So I think that's one way I can think about that. Yeah.
That's very useful. I think the pandemic sort of pivots us to start thinking about this a lot, really, because we realize that what we take for that is good actually only benefits certain segments of society. That's one. And also, I think our perspective of what is human flourishing, what is good, has been largely coming from economic and utilitarian, as well as transactional sort of perspectives. So in this conversation, I really thank you for helping us as Christians to think beyond those perspectives and say that, you know, perhaps God has a vision of life for us here on earth that cannot be entered through that pathway of, because I pay my tax money, I demand this kind of service. That is not common good. That is not the kind of thinking that God would want his children to have. And this common good concept is a framework and an understanding that we need to develop as Christians, that we are here to build something which we call the kingdom of God, which allows people to find dignity, which allows people an opportunity to thrive, and do it in such a way where one person thriving doesn't diminish the other. And in fact, there is a special something, that there is a special joy, there's a special goodness that is being shared. You know, that's called common good. And really, you're right, the ground of common good is God, because God himself is good. And it's as we share in the goodness of God, as we celebrate that, as we nurture that in our own lives and create an environment where the goodness of God can be enjoyed by everybody, from clean air to, you know, our food, to our skills and our abilities, our resources, where we can see all of that as gifts from God, as the goodness of God being given to man. And I think that whole angle is completely different. It's a very different pathway to how we organize societies, to how we evaluate things as well. Am I on the right track?
Yes. I mean, that sounds... I mean, critics of the common good say this is too utopian. You know, this is, you know, it's a pipe dream. You know, it can never be realized in this life. And the Christian tradition admits that, yes, precisely, you know, it can't be achieved in this life. There's no such thing as one day we have achieved the common good and we don't need to do anything anymore, right? But it's pedagogical. It shapes our desires. It forms a certain person. And when people like that are formed, of course, within as Christians, we do believe that when we find these resonances with divine plan and God's eternal law for society, perhaps those points of contact allow us to better articulate the hope of the Christian gospel, you know, the truth of the Christian faith. And why has missions in the Christian history... Why has missions often been together with humanitarian outreach? It's because people can't really hear about the good news until they have some basic social goods or conditions of life in which they can share, right? And that really kind of paves the way for them to understand that there is some hope of the gospel. The gospel is really good news. And so that's why I think missions work has been coupled together with humanitarian outreach in a lot, because that was just the outworking of the gospel in this way. But also in another way, it kind of paved the way for people to receive the gospel. So part of pursuing the common good is really being the church as what she was called to be, you know, and what she was called to do. So I think that's really, yeah, that is the vision that I hope will take in the church.
Yeah, I sure hope so, man. We should be a people who have tasted and known that the Lord is good and have soaked up that goodness and have it flow out of us so that then we can be salt and light, you know. Salt and light is not some kind of... moral overbearing or posturing, but it's really people seeing goodness in our lives, so that our lives is a picture of the good news. I think that will be wonderful, bring great delight to our Father's heart as well. One more question though. This is all very well and good, but we are living in a very westernized, increasingly individualistic and secular culture. So back in church, when we are really not talking about this enough, how can we even begin to educate and disciple ourselves towards this? To an understanding and to an embracing of it and to be able to actually live it out as a agenda for us individually and as communities. Starting steps. Yeah.
Well, one thing that I've been really encouraged by, for example, is the church's response to the plight of the homeless during the COVID-19 circuit breaker. We saw an outpouring of help from the churches willing to reach out into the community to provide shelter, for example. I think where we are at our best has been when we have been engaging society responsibly in this way, in history. That is really where the church has really come to the fore, that common good thinking has come to the fore. I mentioned that the common good, another way of thinking about the common good is as pedagogical, a shaping of a certain person, an education, a shaping of a person's desires and wants. I think that in the church, the conversation needs to be more in that direction. I think about this for preaching, for example, when I'm trying to make an application to the congregation, and I tend to think about it purely in terms of individual terms. You know, what would this mean for you, an individual, to receive this word? I think, for example, in preaching, we could do more to highlight the our common bonds of affection, our common humanity, the fact that we are a body of Christ, and when, you know, when one part of the body hurts, every part hurts. That kind of that idea, it's that individualism and self-identity is so saturated into my thinking that sometimes even in my preaching it comes across in that way. And so I think preaching could be one, the way we do church meetings, how we spend our budgets, for example, the idea that, you know, we are really spending a lot of money on maintenance, our buildings and things like that, that still seems to be a little bit inward looking, right? If we could consider, you know, in Sengkang Methodist Church where I'm from, we have a special needs ministry. You've had them on the podcast before, you know, Dominic and Aaron. And the only reason why this ministry exists in its form in Sengkang is because somebody thought about how special needs people can access the life of the church, how they can be part of the worshiping community, how they can meet God. And I think that's precisely what we need. We need to be thinking about how is my brother or my sister, my neighbor, how are they going to encounter God? And I think if that conversation filters down into our churches, I think that's a good place to start. Because once we are attuned to helping others to journey with them, to help them to point towards God, I think that would be the beginning of shaping our desires, shaping our views, shaping our wants and our needs. The other thing I think we need to do is we need to attend to faithfulness, not distinctiveness, especially when we speak in public. So, for example, some people tend to think if it doesn't say the Bible says this, then we cannot say it, or we shouldn't say it, or we shouldn't do it, you know. But a proposal or a public policy need not be distinctively Christian in order to be good or to be true, right? All it needs to be is to be faithful to the scriptural witness, right? So if a particular policy or a particular proposal is given that doesn't have overtly Christian, you know, language, that's okay. What we need is integrity. We don't need to be unique in a sense. We don't need people to recognize that this is a Christian thing, you know. So I think that really helps, you know, the idea of being able to code switch in public as well for the church when we speak, speaking in what one English theologian called middle axioms, something that we can agree on together, right? I think these are all ways in which the church can. It's also code switching. For the church, it's also an example of how we are pursuing the common good. We want to engage people of all faiths or none. We want to engage people of goodwill and who want to share in this vision of a good society. And so in order to do that, we must be persuasive, you know, in our language, and we need to be non-exclusive in our language. That's okay, you know. And I think that will help to really bring the common good ethic into our behavior, into our acts, into our pursuits in the church.
Great thoughts, starting from the pulpit, down to the persons, and down to the public square. We need to learn to speak more broadly. I do agree with you. I mean, it's no point Christians only speak Christianese, and worse still, we speak Christianese on the weekend, and then on the weekdays we speak a completely different language. God forbid. Yes, I do agree. The code switching, I think, is very important because we need to be understood by people. And I think the effort to understand where people are at and to speak in a way that people can understand is an act of love. And I think that is what God calls us to as we love God and love our neighbors. Thank you so much for talking to us about this subject. It's not an easy subject. It's very meaty. It's actually been around in the church a long time. But maybe the last 100 years or so, it's kind of been sidelined because of the changes in society. We went into a more mechanistic mode and we were more, you know, capitalism and all sorts of things kind of overtook us all a bit. Huh? So a lot of these things begin to get lost on the wayside. So I think it's time to reclaim it, because there's great power in these ideas. There's great power because these ideas convey something deep that maybe we have lost, such as the goodness of God. When we all come to church and say, God is good all the time, we haven't taken time to unpack what we just declared together. So this conversation helps us a little bit in that direction. The Bible reminds us in Leviticus that we are stewards and sojourners on earth. The question is, what are we sojourning towards? You know, and what are we stewarding? And also in Jeremiah, the prophet urges us to seek the welfare of the city. And that's really the starting point when we talk about the welfare of the city, is that God loves humanity and God does want humanity to flourish, even with limits on this broken side of heaven. So thank you for talking to us again. Friends, we all seek to live the good life, and the good life is predicated on knowing what good is. And only God is good, Jesus tells us. So seek God and taste His goodness, imbibe it, talk about it, and together we can build the common good that leads all of us closer to God and more ready for heaven, I dare say.
Yes.
Thank you so much again for talking to us. God bless you, and let us do this.
Thank you.
Pursue the common good together. Thank you.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.